Welcome to Moms in the Wild with Kate
and Kara,
where we laugh at our wild moments to make you feel better about yours.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome to Moms in the Wild.
Hello.
What was your wild mom moment of the week?
The baby turned one and had a little birthday.
Yes.
And on her little birthday, she received the best gift that she's ever received in her 12 months of being alive, which is a tiny red car that she sits upon and the scoot, scoot, scoot push her.
Love it.
And she loves it.
Why wouldn't you?
She loves it a lot, though. She loves it a lot. So we're not big for, at this point in life, like sneaking out or trying to like hide stuff. We really want her to learn like object. Well, she knows object permanency, but when things leave, they come back. And so yeah. We will try to tell her bye. And so she can see us leave. Yeah. Also that she knows she sometimes has to stay at place. She wants to be outside like every time the dog goes outside. And it can't always happen. We can't always just be juggling her. But since she has the car, she can cruise along with us.
She's like, I can go now.
Yes.
I have my own means of transportation.
She's like, I can drive myself. And has been taking full advantage of driving herself, which has been really great. But we've now had to do this thing, which we like weren't doing before. So I guess my wild mom moment is that I'm now hiding a car from my child in like a tiny apartment. And it sometimes lives in her closet. It sometimes lives in our closet. And sometimes I tried to say the car had to go to bed and put a sheet over it. She tried to mount the car with the sheet on it. So it really was just a cluster of interesting tactics, but it's mostly just immediately when she dismounts, like hiding it and hoping she forgets that it exists, which she sometimes does. She doesn't know how to ask for it yet. And since she doesn't know where to point because she doesn't know where we've hid it, that works in our favor. But yeah, just trying to, you know, again, hide a car from my tiny child.
So your wild mom moment is now, you are now lying to your one-year-old.
Yeah,
100%. On a daily basis.
100%.
Awesome.
You know what? It has to happen.
I love that.
Yeah.
Self-preservation, baby.
It only took 12 months, but we're there. / don't acknowledge that the car's left at all. Maybe forgot it existed. I love it.
I do too.
What is your wild moment of the week?
My wild mom moment involves you.
Oh, I'm super excited.
Yeah. So we talked about when we became friends that we have the kind of friendship that we don't need to like talk to each other every day. We can just go, you know, weeks without talking. Well, friends, that has changed.
Yeah.
We now speak every day.
Every day.
Multiple times. I love it.
Oh, yeah, same.
It's just funny how our friendship has transformed. So we do some, like, sometimes call each other for some pod business. You know, we take this very seriously.
We have to collaborate.
Yes, we have to talk about logistics.
Yeah.
And
storyboard. Everyone is not believing this because it's such a clusterfuck that they have to listen to. And it's wild. The amount of editing that you do and really make us actually sound like we have a semblance of what's going on. Or at least I do. You sound like a sane person on screen and off screen. I, however. Ooh. So yeah, but we actually do storyboard, guys.
We do.
We have plan. A plan. We take it seriously.
Yeah, we do have like, I would call them business meetings.
Yeah.
Every so often.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of those last week. You called and you said, I need to talk to you about some pod business. And we're having guest episodes, which you're about to hear one of them, which is so exciting. But we have to do logistics for that. So I knew what time you were calling. I'm like, great. You know, Bella will be, I can give him some fruit snacks, put him on the TV. It'll be wonderful. The problem with that is that anytime I'm doing anything other than like just being available to him, it's pure chaos. We go into like DEFCON 5 of like things. Can I do? What can I do to get my mom's attention?
And what is probably the most dangerous thing I could do to get my mom's attention?
Oh, yeah.
I've never jumped off the couch backward. Try it now.
Yes.
Just try it now. Now's the time. Her full attention's not on me. Time to do it.
Yeah. I looked it up. In the 4 minutes and 20 seconds we were on the phone.
Oh, no.
So many things happened.
This 4 minutes and 20 seconds was a lifetime.
Yeah. We have a tower that he can crawl into in the kitchen because he really likes, we like bake and we cook and he loves to like play in the sink. And so in this time he had pushed his tower to the sink, gotten the hose from the sink, turned the sink on and was just spraying everything with water. So once he was done with that, that was about 20 seconds of the call.
He said, enough chaos here. Let's move on to the next
one. Let's move on. He was hanging from the oven door. He had gotten his whole bag of lollipops out of my diaper bag and had just dumped them on the ground and was choosing amongst them. Meanwhile, like, I would just like to tell you, I don't focus well as a mom now. So when I'm focusing on one thing, I have my full focus on there. So I was not seeing any of this happen.
No.
And he was legitimately like at my feet doing it.
Chaos. wreaking havoc in your house.
Oh, wreaking havoc. Oh, the other thing he did is he likes to go into the drawer, one drawer he's not supposed to go into the kitchen, and got like a Sharpie and was like, just in my face, like, wow, look at me. Because he knows I was going to react. What finally got my attention, though, is he took his red car. He has one of the red cars, like the Flintstone cars that he can drive with his feet, and just slammed it right into my being.
Oh, rough.
And I'm not sure if you heard any of that, but
I was not aware of this. So great job being like, I can multitask. I know you're saying you can only focus on one thing at a time, but I was completely unaware that something insane was happening.
Yeah. I looked around the room and just was like, what in the hell?
What in the 4 minutes? What in the fresh new hell of 4 minutes of life did you just try to destroy?
So I'll just tell you the state of terror I'm constantly in.
Yeah.
As a mom with a toddler.
Yeah. And also, I know we talked about this before, but kid strength. So you're saying he rammed a car into you and everyone's like, he's two, but it's with their full force. Anytime they do anything, it's full out. So rammed a car into you.
We learned what kid full force was like when you got literally slapped across the face. I know. By one.
Yeah. And it was an insult to my person. Disrespect. All right.
That's
great.
It though. You know, chaos.
Chaos.
Yep.
Chaos and little red cars.
God forbid I take 4 minutes and 20 seconds to get some business done.
Unfair.
It's a miracle this podcast exists.
Yeah, it is. 100%. None of it attributed to me. I had to show up. Talk shit. But it...
Show up, talk shit, leave.
We do take it seriously. We do storyboard. We're business-minded woman. Hashtag boss bitch. So that's it for Wild Mom Moments.
Oh, yeah. That's enough.
That has to be it.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about our guest today?
We're here again for a guest episode.
Yay!
We have another guest. And this is also, I do want to disclose, this is our first episode of recording on Zoom.
Yes.
So if it sounds like trash or if it's weird because we're looking at a screen talking to each other's faces, that's why. That's the weirdness. On today's episode, we have Kelly.
Yay!
We have Kelly, who's artist, dog lover, homeschooling mom to one teenager, bless you, this teenager who she's recently started a business with. So very cool.
Very exciting.
So thank you, Kelly, for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be part of this conversation with you all.
So today we're talking about the idea of pivoting in parenting.
Yes.
Which I hear the word pivot and I think of that Friends episode.
Pivot with the couch. With the couch. Yeah.
But it really is like a core foundation of being a parent, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you have day-to-day pivots, you have huge lifestyle change pivots, you have times where maybe the universe, the Lord, whoever was telling you needed to pivot and you decided not to.
You said, no, thank you. You said, not today.
And found out what that looked like. So yeah, that's kind of our goal today, is to talk about pivoting in parenting. We have, I would say, a pivoting expert on the show today, which is very exciting.
That's why you're here.
Also, being the parent of a teenager just deserves an award in and of itself.
Yeah. Thank you. I will gladly accept.
So why don't we start with just thinking of like the day-to-day pivots of what we experience. And what's cool too about the three of us, aside that we're amazing bad bitches, is that we all have children at different life stages, right? Like I'm still with a little baby, toddlerhood, and the throes of, you know, you've been through adolescence and teenagehood and what that it's like there. So with the baby, we'll start with the youngest.
Sure.
Yeah. With the baby, the day-to-day pivots. I mean, she basically runs the house. So I pivot all day long. So I would say the biggest pivots right now would be I am geared up to maybe put her in the car and go somewhere. And my greatest pivot is that's not going to happen for this particular day. Or a good old food pivot. I may have made a meal for her and I'll get into this a little later of the cooking for her, but may have made a meal for her and she's now decided this is my least favorite food in the world and I'm going to throw it on the ground, but I really want her to eat. We must pivot. Nap time. I don't have her on a regular nap schedule. Pivoting around the naps.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that have just happened like today as well. So I do think the day-to-day pivots, you're constantly, again, or hopefully constantly moving with that motion of what you have to do in the day-to-day to make it through.
Yeah.
What is your toddler pivot like?
Toddlerhood pivoting looks like just dealing with the big toddler emotions all the time. So
Bubba doesn't emotionally regulate?
No. That's a milestone we haven't met yet.
Every two-year-old I know really has full capacity to
lock it up. I've got to participate.
My mom needs me. She needs me to do this.
Yeah. So I think sometimes we'll have, I'll have like a whole day of activities planned, and that pivoting looks like he just woke up and he's being a tiny little jerk.
Yeah.
And you know what? I cannot spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically handle what those activities are going to look like. And we just don't do them.
Yeah.
So those are kind of my pivots. Same thing. Feeding is still something we pivot on. I'll put out veggies and fruits with great intentions, and we eat french fries and chicken nuggets because he eats five foods and he's got to eat, I think.
Yeah. I think that's a key component to parenting. You got to feed him.
So yeah, I think that pivoting is more, he's in such a big developmental stage where he is learning how to be a person, how to regulate being a person, what to do with all of these feelings that he is feeling. And I'm trying to raise an emotionally intelligent human as much as I can.
Yeah.
But sometimes mama can't handle it, because I'm also a person who, a human person who needs help with regulating my emotions.
Yeah.
So some days we just can't do stuff. So.
And who is completely responsible for someone else's emotional content, because he cannot regulate his own emotions right now. And so like, you also are partially responsible for his emotions as well, not causing them, but just that response of being like, okay, now how do I cope and deal with this? While you're also trying to have your own emotional response.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's little things too. We were at library group and we have a rotation of teachers, and there's this one teacher who just, he doesn't let the kids have snacks while library time is happening, and it's toddler time, so everyone wants a snack. And it's little pivots even like that where I forgot that this teacher doesn't let food, so I opened a bag of fruit snacks, and big mistake.
Huge, really?
Huge. So oh, you no. have to like weigh, am I going to get shamed by the library teacher?
Yeah.
Am I going to just like try to pivot and take away the snack that I've already, like his favorite snack in the world? So yeah. Just tiny pivots like that where you're like,
and different pivots on different days.
Yeah.
Because I would assume some days your pivot is shame.
Yeah.
Take the shame of the fruit snack. And then other days your pivot is, no, I don't want to feel this shame. And also he'll be okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he'll be okay with a fruit snack.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your teenage pivots?
Well, I don't want to be discouraging to either of you, but those pivots that you've already mentioned never change.
Because, you know what? But then they're just bigger.
Right. And you're pivoting with someone who is capable of some emotional regulation some of the time.
Sure.
You're not sure when they're capable and when they can engage it and when they can't. So that's always a fun guessing game. And then
what a landmine of just human existence that you are waiting through.
Exactly. And we still have the food thing. So yeah, there's a lot of day-to-day pivoting. My son is openly autistic. He likes people to know that about him and how his neurodivergence works. So he has a lot of sensory issues regarding food. Always has, always will. That's just who he is. And so we try to roll with that as best we can. And he's at the age now where he can sort of cook for himself, but he doesn't enjoy it. But he knows it's necessary to move him to the next step in life he wants to be. So we have a lot of pivots about meals currently. And then also he has some chronic health conditions, migraines, the primary one. So we can have a whole day of appointments or responsibilities outside of the house, be all set to head out and go. And it's like, nope, not today. Migraine hit, metric pressure dropped suddenly, or any number of things, many of which we don't know what they are, can trigger a migraine. And then game over. That's it. We are pivoting. We are staying home. We are reevaluating everything, including our day at home, because we also homeschool. So lots of pivoting with the day to day. So we always have a plan, and he and I both work better off a schedule, but the majority of the time it doesn't always follow the schedule. Without the schedule, he and I both are a disaster, because I'm a very anxious person. I need that structure myself. He definitely needs the structure, but we are rarely able to stick to it 100%.
And I think there's something to be said, though, for having that structure to where, it, even if it's just to help quell some of that anxiety. Mm-hmm. I'm the same way. I'm a huge planner, but do I execute 85% of that plan? I'm going to go with no. I can say confident no in that regard.
Same.
But as all of us are talking too, I just keep thinking about how the pivot is for our kids too. Like, our kids are having to pivot and all of these, maybe not the baby as much. She's the one that directs the pivot, but like Bubba is having to pivot, you know, like with those things. And definitely, you know, Adam's having to pivot with those moments too, right? If plan was at the beginning of the day. He knew he woke up. I'm going to eat this meal today. I had it planned. And then that day it's not happening for a multitude of reasons, having to be comfortable with the pivot, not feeling like it's a catastrophic event that we have to change.
Right. And right.
Of course, when this was the initial plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes rolling and adjusting with that pivot is like easy breezy. And then sometimes it's like the end of the world. So, yeah. You know, you're as a parent, I just always waiting to see, all right, which way are we going to play this today? I got to be able to, you know, jump in either way. So it's always being present and aware. Yeah. And some days when you're tired and life takes over and just the state of the world right now, sometimes you just want to kind of check out, but that's mm-hmm. not really an option for any moms. So yeah, that's a big pivot, is checking out is not an option.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You can't pivot. Like, and if you just think back to pre-kids, pre-anyone having kids, if your pivot would look so different, right? Because your pivot would be like back to bed.
Right.
Today is done and it's only 8 a.m., but it is not the day.
Yeah.
The pivot still entails a lot of emotional labor and sometimes physical and mental labor on the behalf of whoever the caregiver is.
Absolutely.
In that same vein, it's important for my toddler, when I say something, he believes me. And he knows that, like, when mom says something, it's going to happen. That's like something I really try to have just be a steady line. Just so like when I do have to say things that are maybe to keep him safe or for disciplinary things, he knows that if I say something, I mean it. So that's hard for me, that juxtaposition of, yeah. I mean what I say, but also sometimes things can't happen. I'm like thinking back to if we have a play date
mm-hmm.
and I try to tell him as much information as I can about everything, get him prepared. So he knows, you know, when you wake up, we got to get dressed. We got to get shoes on right away. He's like a slow waker in the morning. So he likes to like just chill. Yeah.
Same.
Such a mood. Toddlers are such a mood, but you know, I try to prepare him for that. Yeah. And then if those plans get canceled last minute, that's hard. Cause it's like, what I said isn't going to happen. We've built it up. He's been so excited. And then, you know, we have to work through like the letdown. So pivoting with toddler is like, what I feel like you said, it's a little like, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Cause someday the pivot is like, well, today we're going to stay home and do crafts. And it's like, yes, that was the best thing they've ever heard. And then other days you're like, today we have to stay home and do crafts. And it's World War III in the household. Like, ooh, today's not the day you wanted to hear that. I'm so sorry. Yeah. And to like that rigidness of trying to teach, there has to be change.
Yeah.
You know, things have to change. And how do we cope with that and deal with that? And I'm not the best example of that. I don't love change at all.
Nope. I don't either.
Yeah. So trying to mirror that of how we deal with it is wild.
It's a lot of pressure.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And I know we talked about that in a previous episode of just the idea of you're just constantly being watched.
Yeah.
So you have to be like, well, how do I handle this pivot so that my child sees me trying my best to do it well.
Yes.
Right. Right. And when you get to the teenage stage, not only are they watching, they're giving feedback.
Oh, I'd love that.
An example of that actually happened last night. I was enjoying a glass of wine at the end of my day, and he just was kind of standing there. We were chatting about this and that, whatever. And then he just looked at me and he said, Mom, do you drink wine because you like the way it tastes, or do you like the way it makes you feel? And I was like, yes.
No. Yeah.
Because I always am really honest with him and always have these on. And then I was like, okay, that was not the right mom answer. That was the friend answer. And so that's really the trickiest pivot I face right now, is the mom zone and the friend zone, because we do hang out all the time together from homeschooling. We're together all the time. And he is really funny and he's a great human being. So I love being a friend. We love to hang out, watch shows together. He's into reality TV and a lot of stuff that I'm into. And it's so fun to watch that with him. Scary movies. He's old enough to watch scary movies now because he's almost 18. We just have a big old time. But then it's like, oh, wait, I'm still your mom. So finding that, walking that tightrope is something that is a challenge. And I'm trying to learn to navigate it still.
And I imagine too, that is like an enormous pivot point there, where he's like right at the cusp of where you can move more into that friend's territory and kind of be like, all right, you know, you don't need as much structure or as much of that mommy figure. You're still years off from that. But again, trying to be like, how close am I to that line to be able to do that without pushing it too far?
Exactly.
Because once you, even with the baby, I realized once you push that too far, you can't really, you can't get back.
No. Nope.
I let that kid, he woke up one, this is like very relevant in my life right now. One morning he woke up and said his head was hurting and he did have a little bit of a cold. So he said he needed a popsicle. That was going to make him feel better. Oh. So I let it happen for breakfast. And every morning since then,
yeah,
he's like, Mama, tummy out. Popsicle. I'm like, oh. We can't eat popsicle for breakfast.
You let it slide one time.
Yeah.
Yeah. The same thing happened like with the baby too, where just I'll be at my wit's end and she'll be, I don't know, wanting to play with a compass.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, just this one time, play with this decorative compass. And then I'll see her like slowly moving toward it, giving me a devilish smile. And I'm like, oh, really wish I didn't let you do that.
Yeah.
Now I have to redirect you 80,000 times a day to not do the thing I let you do.
Yeah. My bad. I take it back.
Yeah, I take it back, which you don't understand, but I do take it back. So what are some of the bigger like lifestyle or pivots that we've made? And this is anywhere in I would say parenthood, from conception or like family planning all the way through now where we're at.
I think our biggest lifestyle pivot was, I've talked about this in other episodes, but we had Bubba and then a month later, the pandemic happened. And yeah. So everything shut down. So my plan was always to go back to work. And we were going to be a two-income family and then the pandemic. But yeah, so that was a big pivot. So going from our plan of a two-income household, mm-hmm. I was going to go back to work to now I am a full-time stay-at-home mom. We're on one income. That was a huge pivot, especially in my marriage. You know, I think that was more difficult. We definitely sought out a couple's counselor during that time, yeah. To be very honest, because it's hard when you have to make those huge pivots. I think you have to be able to access support at the same time, or else it just feels much bigger than it actually is. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal going from what we thought it was going to be, what financially our life was going to look like, to now going into what it looks like now. But that added support is just like super helpful when you're going through something like that.
Yeah. And it's a whole, like, it is a lifestyle pivot. Yeah. So you were changing the entirety of your life while having a global pandemic happen, mm-hmm. and also having a child.
And like your future too.
Yeah.
You know, my husband's a big saver, planner, investor in their future. And so that changed his spreadsheets dramatically, yeah. You know, of like when retirement looked like, and he was thinking like really far into the future. So that was a lot of pivoting of conversations we had even had before we got married. You know, we wanted to make sure we were on the same page with what raising our family looked like. So yeah. It was a big, big one for us. And we have it figured out now, thank God. And if we hadn't have been able to figure it out, then we had fallbacks, mm-hmm. of like, this is what we will do. And we'll do this and see if it works for us. But some of those pivots, you don't have that option. You just have to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
In a similar sense, you know, I have a very similar pivot to you with the work thing. Yes. And the pandemic affects us too. So when we were talking about having kids was in family planning context, right as the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget, someone was having a conversation with me. It was an acquaintance. And they were just like, I think anyone that's actively trying to get pregnant right now is selfish. And this was in the beginning where I don't think anyone was fully grasping that the pandemic was going to be like a permanent structure in our life.
Yeah.
And there that they were like, it will end. So I know they didn't mean it. They also didn't know, you know, our situation because it was an acquaintance, but I was like, yeah, oh, still,
what a bold thing to just,
yeah, what a bitch. I was like, yeah. And it struck me. So that too was like a big conversation that we had. We moved in with my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law during the pandemic because we just didn't know what was happening with everyone's jobs. They owned their home. We were renting. And it definitely alleviated a lot of stress of like what that would look like financially to everyone. But also that plays into how you're planning a family. Yeah. You know, like, do they want to be living with a screaming infant, like child? And how long are we willing to prolong that?
Also like comfortability. Like, yeah. Do you want to be trying for a baby in the same room as your sister, yeah, where your house is your sister-in-law,
where your sister is across the house from us.
What a story.
And like, not letting them know that, but also be like having to have open conversations of like, are you cool with me being pregnant here?
Yeah. Like,
you know how this happens, we're all adults, so just want to let you know. Yeah,
you guys just sneak off after watching a show. Good night.
Yeah.
Wow, it's early for them.
What are they doing? I'm just leaving ovulation things around the house. We we hang a scrunchie on the door?
Stitch a sock on the door.
But that whole pivot too, which I know was probably more of a global pivot in the same way that you guys made that lifestyle pivot, which was just what does this look like in delaying or prolonging or whatever the idea of family planning. When we had talked about it, obviously we never considered or spoke about a pandemic and what that would look like. Not buying a home, like we completely moved away from that idea because of a lot of the pandemic and what happened with the market, and not wanting to be in like what felt like a more unstable living situation by buying a house and being stuck in that and having that. So that was another enormous life pivot. And to also with you, whenever we had talked about having kids, never in my wildest imagination, dream world scenario, was I going to leave work to any capacity. Whenever we talked about, when we made like, again, going back to that being a planner, we had like 3 spreadsheets of possible scenarios of what could happen. And in every single one of those, if someone had to stay home for whatever circumstance, it was Chris.
Yeah.
Like at no point in time was I like, yeah, I'm going to step away. And then immediately once I was pregnant, I was like, yeah, it's not gonna happen for me. And it completely changed. And then you have, and I'm talking about from the moment Chris and I were together and talking about having kids. Mm-hmm. So that's years of like, if someone has to stay home, it's gonna be, you know, you or our mom's gonna help, which they do, or daycare or whatever. Then in 10 short months to be like, how are we gonna do this?
Yeah.
Kelly, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us some of your larger life pivots, and if you want to start us back again to like family planning or when, you know, Adam was first born or wherever.
Sure. Some of the big ones were when we started family planning, we always said, you know, any time of year except in December or in the winter, because my husband's a retail manager and he was born the Monday after Thanksgiving. So there you go. So there was our first huge pivoting moment for him. He was supposed to be off like a week with us. He got to be off 3 days. And then even then he was on the phone with work the entire time. And so that just started a whole chaotic series of events that we had to pivot through right at the very beginning. But the biggest, if I had to pick one huge pivoting moment, I would say it was the decision to homeschool. And it was in the middle of third grade, because I never pictured myself as a homeschool mom. Never, ever did I ever think that was anything I'd be interested in. I knew people that did it. I had friends that did it. My sister did it for a few years. Kudos to them. So all of that, I couldn't imagine my child not being in school, but it just turned out to be the right thing for our family. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do it for the rest of third grade.
Sure.
And then we'll get the situation, because we were having some problems, you know, educationally with some of his challenges and his IEP and all that. But that's a whole other podcast for that. Yeah. Basically, I was like, okay, we're going to take this next few months. I can homeschool the rest of third grade. No problem. We'll get this figured out. And then he'll go back in the fall. And here we are. He's in a senior year now. And I wouldn't change a thing about it. I love homeschooling. Yeah. It's phenomenal, because the freedom that you have to help your child become the person that they are meant to be. You can focus in on their talents and there's just so much freedom that it was the best pivot of my life. I just resisted it for as long as I could and did not know it would be anything I would enjoy.
Yeah. That's so incredible that you, again, I know Caitlin has mentioned this in another episode, but having that ability to pivot, and especially when it's something that you didn't necessarily have an interest in, were not confident that you could absolutely do and execute, and only committed to for like the remainder of a year, to now fast forward to where you are now, to have made that pivot for the best interest, with the best interest of your child in mind.
Yeah. And it's still terrifying, because it feels like if I stop and think about it, I could probably talk myself right into some severe anxiety right now, because it's just a huge responsibility, because if he goes out into the world and there's something we missed, it's on me. Like, you know, I can't blame, you know, Miss So-and-so in seventh grade. Whatever. It's me. But at the same time, just the opportunities we've had.
Yes.
You know, the travel we've been able to do, not like we've traveled the world, but we've been able to see family when we've needed to. We've been able to just pick up and go and do things that other families cannot do because of the public school schedule.
Yeah.
it just worked out beautifully for us and for his style of learning, because he's a very tactile learner and he's been able to have a very different kind of education where he's not sitting in front of books, you know, and he's a visual learner as well. So we've been able to cater a lot to his learning style.
Yeah.
It's just been wonderful. So those pivots were really good, but they were really big in my life plan.
Yeah.
So
to quell your anxiety about if you missed anything, I don't think I said this on the podcast before, but I grew up in a military family. So I moved 12 different times before I came to college. So by the time I was 18, I had done 12 different moves. And I don't know what grade this was, but at one school, they were just about to teach us how to all the parts of a sentence, like nouns, adverbs, verbs, yeah. adjectives, all that. And then we moved halfway through the school year. And then that school had just done it. And I never learned it. I just don't. I to this day, they're like we
when they're like conjunction. Yeah. You're like, I don't know what your function is.
Yeah, I never learned it. I know enough to like get by, yeah. you know. But like
she can read a book.
She's yeah, good. I have a college degree, so he'll get by.
Yeah,
it's just it feels huge.
Yes.
But it's also like, I wouldn't trade it. Like I wouldn't, there's so many parts of him I feel like I wouldn't know, you know, like his acting skills, his photography skills, all of these other sides of him that I didn't know he had until we played around with different types of classes just to keep his interest level. And then you can incorporate any subject into almost anything that your child is interested in. You can, you know, there's math and everything, there's reading and everything. So, I mean, it all works out. And he has a natural interest in current events and things like that. So, I mean, it just comes, the education comes. And I just thought that my reality of education and what I thought about it is so different. But I've learned so much and I'm better for it. So mm-hmm. I'm thankful for the opportunity. But at the time I was like, oh dear, this is going to be a messy mess. And I'm not saying it's been smooth sailing, because we have tried every curriculum on the market. But it's happened and here we are. So
if you wouldn't mind, could you talk us through when Adam was diagnosed and like how that sure. like for you and like maybe what that even looked like, maybe like after that appointment, like the kind of pivots that you kind of foresaw having to come or yeah. like what that looked like when that happened?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can tell you the day, November 6, 2006.
That was right before a birthday for him then, right?
Right before his second birthday.
Oh, okay.
But your recent episode about milestones was hilarious because I can so relate to all of those things. And, you know, I was the one reading everything and trying to make sure, because I was completely neurotic as a new mother. So anyway, he was doing great. Everything was going fine. And then when he was 18 months old, over the course of a long weekend, things just started to drop off. His speech dropped off. Not that he was saying a ton of words, but he stopped babbling. He stopped pointing. He stopped playing with his toys. He stopped eating. He didn't want anything that he had been eating. He wanted to go back to more of like a liquidy kind of baby food kind of thing, which was all super weird. And so then started a long line of testing. They tested his hearing. They sent us to an allergist. They sent us to a neurologist to do an MRI and make sure he didn't like all of a sudden have something horrifically structurally wrong.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. And yeah, through 6 months of tests and anxiety, basically, then they came to this. I mean, people had thrown around the word autism, but at that time, like we were right on the cusp when you never heard of it versus yeah. everyone is getting diagnosed. So we were right in that in between little donut hole. And so we didn't know anything about it. We didn't know anyone who had that diagnosis. We didn't yeah. know what to do with that. But anyway, we actually ended up taking him to, he had been seeing someone at a children's hospital, and then they brought in someone from a medical university who this team, they had like an autism, they were just starting to like do a whole battery of things. So they like requested that they spend a whole day with him, with us there, and just watch how he interacted with his world. And they did that. And then prior to that, they had also requested videotapes, any home movies we had. And so they were able to watch his development.
Oh, interesting. And
through wow. the series of all of that, he met the criteria.
Okay.
So it was devastating to hear, but I think by that point, we knew something horrible was going on. Not that autism is horrible, now that we know it's a neurodivergence.
Sure.
That he processes the world in his brain, it's much easier to cope with. But at that time, it was like, whoa, life as you know it will never look the same. You know, he's going to need this, he's going to need that. He's probably never going to talk. He's probably never going to do this, that, or the other. And he basically does all of those things. Mm-hmm. He got to them in his own time and in his own way through early intervention, speech, occupational therapy, physical therapy. And we still do all of those things from time to time. Like yeah. he doesn't have to be in it year round 365, but at least a few months a year, we're brushing up on something because his learning is very not symmetrical.
Yeah.
One thing will go way forward and something else will start to slip. So you got to just hold back on this vocab. I mean, he has a wonderful vocabulary, and then work on these fine motor skills for a while. Yeah. And things like that. So that's, you know, basically the gist of it. But that also led to a major pivot for my husband, because he had actually stopped working in retail because he wanted to have better hours and more time with the family. But when we got the diagnosis, it was like, okay, we have to have really good health insurance.
Sure.
So he went back to retail because that was more predictable, stable environment where we knew what our benefits were. And so that was another pivot, just to be able to have that and be able to get as many services as we could cover by insurance. Because at that time, speech therapy was not covered. It is now, but you know, back then, being able to communicate was not a life skill for some reason. But anyway.
As deemed by insurance, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, but
yeah, that's not really a necessary life skill.
You'll figure it out, right?
Yeah. So
you're going to have to use a lot of grunting. We don't really care if you can speak. Right. Oh, thank you, insurance company.
So yeah, lots of pivoting with that. And it was devastating on the one hand, but then on the other hand, it was so much relief because for 6 months,
oh,
we didn't know what was going on. Yeah. Just knew that that wasn't how it used to be. And, but looking back, there were things like in his early infanthood that we can see now that, you know, obviously he was born with the way his brain processes information. Now there could have been environmental things that intervened with how his neurons fired and things like that. But genetically, I mean, we feel that it probably runs in both sides of our family at some point.
Sure.
And we also have had him genetically tested now, actually for his migraines, but they actually found that, you know, there is some genetic predisposition with a chromosome. He's actually missing a chromosome that we didn't know about that actually has to do with immunity, which is very interesting because autoimmune disorders run in my family.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, that makes sense. It didn't answer this question, but it does help me understand this thing. And so anyway, we're always learning about him. And I think it made us more hands-on parents.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
That's such a great, incredible pivot. I had what a parent described to me that whose child was diagnosed with a autism spectrum disorder. And they described it as like getting on a plane to go on vacation and you're going to Australia. So like, this is the expectation you have. And then the plane lands and you're in England, right? Yeah. It's not like you said, the news was very devastating in that it was going to be a huge change, but that's what it is, right? It's just this,
right.
It's not what you expect. You're forced into a pivot that you didn't necessarily expect. I think you just have to, again, immediately make that pivot of unexpected, and you've done it beautifully. Like, to
be able thank to, you. Thank you.
Yeah. Take care of your kid in that way.
That's I would incredible. Say hearing it. I would describe it as like expertly. Just hearing you talk about the care and the interventions and the extra support you made sure he received. This is like, I firmly believe that every kid has their mom for a specific reason. And like, you are the perfect mom for Adam. Like you really, it sounds like have set him up for success. And I think it's really cool that you described coming into this in a time where like not a lot of people were talking about it. I don't think there were a ton of examples of adults with autism who were doing their own thing. So I can imagine that seemed like a very scary frontier to be entering in. And to have you now have a child who is turning into an adult who is an example for other moms who can look to you guys and say, you know, they did it. And like, I just think that's very cool and very full circle of,
yeah.
You know, you kind
thank
of
you.
Entered into this frontier that you didn't know nothing about and have just done it so beautifully that now you get to be this wonderful example to anyone else who may need that.
Yeah. And as having this pivot moment yeah. where they've just received whatever that news is, but big unexpected news that's really like pulled the rug out from under them. And then how do we move forward from here? And we talked about a little bit in the beginning of the episode, you have all your mom emotions and parent emotions and all these things, but you're also trying to, you know, help to get that kiddo where they need to be. Mm-hmm. So like you're right. doing this huge pivot and maybe grieving a little bit of what your expectations were or what you thought what things were going to be, or I now need to do a bunch of research. There wasn't a lot of visibility, you know, with an autism spectrum disorder when Adam was being diagnosed. So it was doing all of this right. work that I imagine you didn't intend to to be doing, and carrying it through to pivot and have the best possible life for your child.
Yeah.
Which sounds repetitive. I know we just keep like showering you in praise, which you rightfully deserve, but it is such a good example of having that pivot moment and you having to deal with your own feelings about it while also creating a healthy and helpful environment for your child, which is what you did.
I think no matter what your baby has or the challenges may be, that level of trust between mom and child is everything. So always go with what your gut says. And that would be my advice to any mom, any parent, always go with what you know to be true about your child.
Absolutely.
It's so encouraging to hear you say that, because so much of it is relying on the intuition, having that like little thought in the back of your head, seeing your story and you're like, something's not right here. And then knowing, I can imagine that felt extremely validating and then opened up this world of like, now we can help him. Now there's something we can do. I would have felt very relieved. Like, okay, yeah. We have a plan and I was right. You know, like I'm doing right by my kid.
Yeah. I think so. Just being validated in that, yeah. where it is a skill set that you use throughout your life, just being able to look at your child and say, I know that something's off. I know that something's going on, and having the confidence to listen to yourself.
Yeah.
Because as all of us are sitting here, we've all talked about that we tend to be anxious people. So it is, I feel from medical professionals and sometimes people outside the family unit can feel a little gaslighty when they're like, oh, they're fine, or this isn't anything to worry about. And you really wait it out, see what happens. Yeah. And you really have to stand firm and know, I've waited it out and that's why I'm here. Yeah. Like I've waited my comfortable level and my child's right. comfort level of waiting it out. And that is why I'm bringing it before you. If I thought I could handle it, I would be handling
yeah.
it. Like absolutely. I've done all the things that are in my capacity and that's why I'm before you, professional person. So wait right. it out is the right answer.
Right. Right.
And it is that, like, you are the expert in your field, medical professional, but I'm an expert in my individual right. child. As we've talked about these pivots, day to day, big, huge lifestyle pivots, have there been times in this parenthood journey when we've refused the pivot? Yeah. We fought against the pivot. My most recent example is I love to cook. That will be the start of it. I like to cook because it makes me feel like I'm doing something. It also is something I feel I can do kind of mindlessly.
Yeah.
And so it helps me to relax and disconnect. And for some reason, when I got pregnant, I was like, I will share my love of cooking with my child. And the initial way I can do that is by cooking 3 meals for this child 7 days a week. There are people that do that, and I'm sure they do it well.
What a goal.
I'm not one of those people. But I just had, I was not willing to pivot. And Chris was so sweet and would be like, leftovers. Or like, you and I could do a frozen meal. So you're just cooking like one meal for the baby instead of trying to make this huge meal all of the time. And also because I do work outside of the house part of the time, I was trying to meal plan for the next day. So I basically was only cooking was what was happening. So I was either only cooking on one day and that's what I was doing for the entire day, or I would get home from work, spend like what felt like 15 minutes with the baby and then go back into the kitchen to cook.
Yeah.
But it was something I had so convinced, I do still love it. It's something that I was like, no, I want to do this. I want to be able to engage with food in this way and be able to give this to her and provide for her in this way. And it took a long time to pivot from that, to be like, yeah, I don't need to cook 3 meals a day all the time.
Yeah.
She's great with a quesadilla.
Yes.
Yeah. Slap some cheese on tortilla and she is a satisfied customer.
Yeah.
So I don't need to be making like a Michelin chef that's 50% of it goes on the floor. So I, and that's where it was hard for me to pivot, because it was not working out the way that I had expected it to. And I refused to see and acknowledge that. And it was a very frustrating thing to pivot from.
Yeah, but you have now.
I have. Yeah, it's better. Oh my gosh. Did it. Yeah. It did it. I made the pivot happen.
You're still new here.
Yeah.
You know,
we're still figuring it out.
I'm still figuring it out.
Oh yeah. 100%.
One for me where I was really rigid is continually thinking that at some point you would go back to public school, because all the kids go to public school and I can go back to work and this is going to be fine. And especially with after school care, we tried a couple of different things even while he was homeschooling, just to do a little after school care to get him ready and used to that. And every time it was disastrous. And every time I thought, no, this is going to work out. We're going to hunker down and this is going to start working. And it would just continue to spiral. I mean, one time on the second day there, I hit a deer. It's like the universe is saying, stop acting crazy. And I'm like, no, but I know best. I can push this situation and get my way. And the universe is just like, stop it. So I have been known to resist the pivot, and it has never worked in my favor.
No, like you said, that pushback from, you're like, no, universe, I know best, it's totally fine. And then just like basically lighting my house on fire every day, trying to cook, you know, hitting a deer.
I love that. Maybe that will get it in her head.
So yeah, I think we would want to just talk about like teenage saga too. A little insight, a little nugget.
What are we in for?
Yeah, what is to come? Don't scare us too much, but a fair amount of terror is okay.
Okay. One of the most out of control feelings I've ever had as a mom is the first time you get behind the wheel and your child is in the driver's seat.
Oh no.
I just had a sheer wave of panic wash over my body.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
No way to prepare for that. There is no way to prepare when you see the stop sign ahead and there's no application of the brake yet.
Oh my gosh.
A car is coming the opposite direction, you know, like, and you're just so close to that middle line or so close to the ditch. There's nothing that can prepare you for your child driving. That I'll say.
Before you do your second point, I just want to say for the viewers, if you are listening, this is a true Moms in the Wild moment that Carolyn is actively pumping right now. So if you hear background noises that sound like pumping, that is what's happening.
It's that. So yeah. We did make Kelly aware. So yeah. Now we just want all of you to be aware. So
sorry, Kelly.
Yeah. Continue on. Let everyone listen to those sweet, sweet pump sounds in the
background. People have PTSD. They're like, no, I can't.
They're like, I know that sound, that phantom sound.
One of the funniest ones is like the first time you hear your teen say, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, it's like funny and scary. And my husband, who is also named Dave, is like, well, he sure didn't hear that at school. So like, of course it came from mom. And, you know, it's like, oh,
he did hear it at school. He heard it at homeschool.
Yeah.
That's right. So there's little demon classmates of his in the homeschool.
Exactly.
There's three dogs.
They've been teaching him nonsense.
Mouse. Right. So yeah, that's funny. It's when, you know, he starts expressing himself verbally like that. And so there's all those things, but there's a lot of things along the way that prepare you for a teen though. The first time you leave them at a birthday party, mm-hmm. The first time you leave them at a sports practice or whatever they're into, all of those things, those little letting go moments along the way help prepare you. So it's not totally upside down. But it is very different. But it's also so similar to what you all said in the beginning, you know, the emotional regulation, the all of those things. And parenting in general is everything that I thought it would be, just a million times more.
Yeah.
Yes.
Harder, more fun, more exhausting, more rewarding, all the things.
It's nice to hear you say that you have these letting go moments, because my husband and I are talking about potentially homeschooling our Bubba and then potentially any other kids we have. So I was worried about, like, if we do decide to go that route, will I be able to eventually one day be like, all right, I'll get out, you know? Yeah. So it's reassuring to hear you say that.
Yeah. And one of the things that will help prepare you for that is there are no teacher work days.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Yeah. We so appreciate you chatting with us and giving us some awesome insight and perspective. You actually have made me feel super excited about the teenage years.
Because I wouldn't go that far.
I am pumped because it feels like what I'm doing, but now there's more sass. And I love a little
There's a lot of sass. Yeah. And a lot of hanging out. Like if you're into like movie watching or, you know, the same sport or whatever, you get all this time and you can actually like interact about it. And I mean, he and I could start our own podcast on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and just rock it.
Oh my God. Love.
This is an idea. You're experts. I like it. So before we wrap up for the day, I wanted to see if you could talk to us just a tiny bit about, I know you started a business with Adam, but just a tiny little insight into what you guys are working on and what you're doing.
Yeah,
sure. So it has nothing to do with my educational background or any work I've ever done. And
we love that.
Adam got his first camera when he was 12, loves taking pictures, has always had a really good artistic eye for angle and aperture and all those things that I don't even know what they mean, but I know the picture looks really pretty. As part of his senior project, we were trying to come up with something that would incorporate all the subjects and also help him think about what might be next for him. Cause I don't want him to feel like, okay, the minute you graduate and you're going to be 18 next month, and then you're going to graduate in the spring and you got to know what's happening. Like, where are you going? What are you doing? Again, it's not a race. So when he gets there, he gets there, but it's time to figure some things out. So we decided that it might be fun for us to start a little business with an Etsy store where he can sell some of his photography and he can learn about inventory and profit, loss, marketing. We can incorporate all these different life skill things, money management into school and maybe a business. What I didn't realize was that he's been a successful business owner for like the last 3 years. He's been running an online business, which I knew he was doing, but I didn't realize the success of it. And I am blown away by how this kid can turn a sale and make money off of Disney pins. So he has been flipping, like people do houses, Disney pins for like 3 years. And I mean, he always has more available money than I do. And so when I thought I would be teaching him, I'm actually going to be learning a lot from him. And I have always enjoyed drawing and sketching and things like that. So I've started watercolor and it's kind of taken off. And so now I'm selling art and he's selling photography and we actually have our products in two local shops. I mean, all of this has transpired in the last 2 months. So it's very fast, very new, flying by the seat of our pants, but we're having a blast. And I think both of us will learn a lot.
That is so exciting.
That's very cool. And I love that you said he's getting to teach you stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, what a cool moment.
Yes. I'm learning so much from him.
Well, congratulations on that.
Tell us where we can find all of that.
Okay. So we have an Etsy store called Cooper Art and Gifts.
Okay.
And we are also on Instagram. And slowly I am working on a Society 6 shop.
Nice.
Also under the same name, Cooper Art and Gifts. And so, we're trying to get the word out and, we'd appreciate you checking us out. There's some holiday cards and lots of nice photography and, we'll Fun. See.
That's so cool.
And for our listeners, a link to the Etsy store will be in our description, the episode description of this episode.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. So fun.
I think that's it for today. Yeah,
Kelly, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
Very eye-opening, and we really appreciate you getting vulnerable and sharing all this like information because I think it is super helpful.
Yes, thank you so much. I loved being here.
Yay.
Keep going.
Thanks.
Yay. Yeah. So like Kate said, thank you so much for being here. And if you want to connect with us, you can find our socials, Instagram and TikTok.
Yep.
At @momsinthewild_pod.
If you would like to email us, you can reach us at connect@momsinthewild.com.
Or call us, leave us a message. Tell us how much you loved Kelly. Tell us how much pivoting you do. Tell us all your things.
If you have any follow-ups for questions for Kelly and you want her to come back, we would love to have her.
Yeah. Send us everything. And you can do that. You can leave us a message at 8 call mom.
Yep.
You have to sing it now though, because I usually sing it.
8 7 8 call mom.
Yay. Thanks again, Kelly. We love you.
Love you guys.
We love the listeners.
It's a jungle.
Stay safe.
Bye.
Bye.